Hello, hockey fans, and once again, thanks for tuning in to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. You can always find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and HockeyTalkRadio.us. I'm Mark Warner. As always, Chris Lisa, my co-host. This week, we got a very special guest, Scott Lowe. We're going to talk about the team with the best record in the National Hockey League. We've been trying to get a Washington Capitals contributor on for quite a little bit now, and lucky enough for us that Scott was able to cut some time out of his schedule to hook up with us before. I guess we got a head-to-head going tonight, boys, huh? Caps Isles? Is that what we're looking at here? So we're gonna try and bust this out real quick. Let them get to watching what they cover here. Scott, thanks again for joining the show. We really appreciate your time.
Oh, no problem. Glad to be here.
And you guys, Capitals fans, or just want to read some good content about the hottest team in the sport, only 10 regulation losses so far this year. You can find Scott at Beltway Sport. And I think, did you get your, you mentioned in one of the emails prepping for the show, you had a couple articles you were trying to get up. Did those get posted?
Yeah, it's a pretty time year for me with my real life. I'm actually an assistant athletic director at Loyola University in Maryland. Right now we're overlapping sports season, so our basketball teams are winding down and we're starting up lacrosse, and we're top 10 lacrosse team, and we host Johns Hopkins on Saturday. So I haven't been writing as much as I would like, but I did just post something this week. A little bit of reminiscing about Peter Bondra 12 years ago when at the trade deadline, when he was traded for Brooks Like. And you know, Brooks Like's been with the Caps ever since. He's become kind of a fan favorite and a staple in the lineup for the last 11 years, played 700 games, I think, or something like that. And just sort of kind of pondering with his big salary and Mike Richards coming on board, I kind of just posted a little piece that, you know, Like was acquired for Peter Bondra, and he's become a fan favorite now, although he may not have been when he was picked up. And, you know, if the Caps did get an offer, you know, his salary at 4.5, being a fourth line player right now, is high. But he is a great penalty killer, a good all-around, solid acquisition, a veteran leader in the locker room. You know, with a team that has an injury to a veteran and thinks they might need another piece, you know, would the Caps be able to move him, and probably pick up some of his salary? But would they do that for somebody who's been with the team this long when the chemistry is so good, but they've kind of got a logjam when Jay Beagle comes back? So it's just kind of an interesting question. If they could move some of that salary, would they consider moving a guy like that, even though the team's doing so well? And just kind of posted that. As a fan, I hope they don't, because I'd like to see the guy stick with them if they were able to, you know, accomplish the unthinkable and actually win it this year. But, you know, it's a business, too, and to open up a couple $1 million on that cap and, you know, a $4.5 million fourth liner with 6 points isn't the world's greatest investment. And it's just kind of an interesting thing to consider for Caps fans coming up on the deadline when nobody thinks they're going to do anything right now.
It's funny you mentioned Mike Richards signing and also too expensive fourth line player in the same sentence. That kind of directly led to him ending up, you know, long story short, obviously, but a too expensive fourth line player, kind of a parallel to what he was going through in LA. And being a Kings fan myself, I felt the same way. That whatever happened with the team and the salary cap, and you know whatever went on personally with him, I was sad to see him go. He's the direct reason why the Kings won their first Stanley Cup, I believe. And
yeah, and you look at him coming to the Capitals organization. You know, you've got, for the first time ever, you've got people in this locker room who won Stanley Cups with Justin Williams and Brooks Orpik. And now you've got Williams, you've got Richards, who's won two. Just there's some intangibles there that, you know, you're looking at right now when Beagle comes back. You got Mike, you got Mata, Michael Lada, looks like, you got Mike Richards, you know, all looking at the fourth line. Marcus Johansson's been tearing it up on the third line, so I don't see him putting Beagle back into the third line. You've kind of got right now four guys for three spots on the fourth line. It's great to have depth. You need depth. Somebody's going to get hurt
100%.
Going through the playoffs if you're making a run. But, you know, if somebody would take that salary, I hate to say it, but, you know, from a business standpoint, it would make great sense for Washington to move him. I just don't know with the price tag, if it would happen, they would definitely have to pick up a large chunk of the salary. But also, you know, having Richards in the locker room is a big thing, you know, as far as the experience of winning the Stanley Cup.
See, that's kind of a parallel with what Dallas is going through. One of the hottest teams in the West is that they, in the offseason, picked up Patrick Sharp and Johnny Oduya, and also Anthony Emma, who some people might not remember, won a Stanley Cup with Chicago as well. And I put a big chunk of what I think of teams as to what they have in the locker room. And one of that, obviously, with Brower and Ward leaving and bringing in Ocean Williams, and now here later in the season bringing in Mike Richards, having that experience in the locker room, I think obviously is propelling Dallas forward. And your feeling is that's going to make a big difference in the room and in a playoff run this year, is what I'm reading correctly.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest surprise, everyone was thrilled to pick up Justin Williams just because of the playoff experience, but being on the East Coast and not having seen him consistently in a few years, you know, I for one, and I think a lot of people are really surprised at just the overall game that he has. I mean, he kills penalties. You know, he's on the power play. Sometimes he's on the first unit, sometimes on the second unit. But, man, he competes every night. Like, a guy that's been in the league that long that just brings maximum effort every night. And you see him, he gets picked off with the officials, you know, in a game that might be, you know, a 3 or 4 goal game. He gets a penalty call, the Caps get a penalty call, and he's ticked with the officials. And he gets competitive and hates to lose. And you can see why a guy like that has just had that success within a team formula. And they've been a leader and just been a great, you know, pressure playoff performer. And I think, you know, he probably doesn't get the notoriety, but his signing might have been bigger than Oshie just in terms of the overall impact on the team.
Well, one thing about a Coach Sutter team is if you don't bring that tenacity and grit and competitiveness every night, then you'll be watching from the press box. So I could tell you that right now that my guess is that Kevin Gravel is not going to play tonight from that. I'm sure you remember the game-winning goal against the Kings the other night. The puck was loose on Jonathan Quick's left-hand side. Gravel leaves his right defenseman side, tries to go behind Quick in the net to get to that puck. And who picked it up? Justin Williams. Flipped it around behind the net, out front, game-winning goal. Pretty sure Gravel's not going to be in the lineup tonight after making that kind of a mistake. But Teddy Nolan's kid, Jordan Nolan, earlier in the season, he wasn't consistently competing. And on fourth line duty, that's pretty much your biggest asset is to compete. And they were bringing up Michael Mersch came up and played a little bit. A couple of the rookies had a little bit more playing time with Jordan Nolan watching from the penalty box. And he's been on both Stanley Cup teams. So I'm not surprised to hear you say that about Stick, as they called him. Or he hates the nickname Mr. Game 7, but I believe that guy's earned it if anybody has. Chris, I know you had a couple. We're sitting here doing the Kings reminiscing. I know you had some questions you wanted to jump in with, Chris. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, actually, my first one was on Justin Williams, and got talked about it a bit. But I think a big asset, and time will tell, that you know the Capitals have been, you know, a high quality team, you know, for a while now. I think for most of the organization's time in the NHL, it's just they can't seem to win a key game to get them out. In recent times, the first round or second round, sort of last year, how much do you think that Justin Williams is effect with the other guys is going to help make this team believe that, you know what, we came so close and in my opinion, should have beaten the Rangers last year, that we're going to get the key goal and be able to move on?
I think it's huge to bring that experience and that leadership in the locker room, and you can see that he's comfortable because just the way he does lead and the way he does compete. And he just fit right in. I mean, you wonder sometimes a guy comes in like that and you know he's going to be respected right away, but you're just like one of the guys now. From what, you know, if you watch him kind of interact in the locker room and on the ice, I think that the win against the Islanders last year, and I hate to bring that up with you guys, but I think getting over that seventh game hump, that first round, you know, there's kind of a little bit of a misnomer in that the Caps have been a first round flop. Over their history, they certainly have that reputation, but they, you know, they've advanced to the second round a few times in the Ovechkin era. They haven't gotten over that hump, but I think right. winning that game seven, and the way they did, they came from behind a few games, they battled through adversity with Grubauer playing the one game instead of Holtby when Holtby was sick. You know, it's a team that is much more mature, and when you look at defensive responsibility, obviously Barry Trotz brought that to the team, but, and we talk about changing the culture and buying in, I mean, they've all clearly bought in. It's not 1 through 6, you know, 3 of their defensemen this year, for a good part of the year with Brooks Orbig out for 40 games, have been Taylor Tourney, you know, Nate Schmidt, and Dmitry Orlov, who are all young guys. I guess Tourney's not really young, but maybe only 130 games of NHL experience. You know, those aren't household name defensemen, but you're still leading the league or second in the league in goals against because of the system and the buy-in from the forwards. And that defensive mentality combined with the skill, and a guy like Justin Williams rubbing off on the two skill guys he plays with. I mean, the goal that you guys that you referred to earlier against the Kings the other night by Kuznetsov, you know, Kuznetsov scored a lot of pretty goals. Burakovsky's a skill guy. That was a grinded out shift, and they just got it in deep, and they
100%.
They fought and battled, and they got a goal. And those are the things that the Caps didn't used to do, and those are the things that a guy like Williams brings. I mean, if you look at Oshie on the first line, he's got great skill. He's got a pretty good burst. You know, good shot, great offensive ability, but he also battles and he creates space. And that combination with Ovechkin and Backstrom, we've never had that before. They've had skill guys up there who maybe weren't as skilled and didn't bring much else to the table. And then they've tried some guys who are less skilled up there and really couldn't keep up. But now they got a guy who creates space. And if Backstrom floats him a beautiful pass, he can finish. It's not going to bounce off a stick. And, you know, those types of things, the Williams leadership and kind of rubbing off the defensive mentality and the culture change, and then, you know, really finding a guy who can play on the first line and keep up with those guys. It's a good situation right now. I was concerned going into the season a little bit with the defense, with the young guys. And the injury to Orbig might be a blessing in disguise because a lot of those guys have got more experience. Nate Schmidt now has really become a second pairing defenseman, playing with John Carlson still. Orpik came back in the lineup and played with Orlov the other night. So, you know, you've gotten some experience that maybe you didn't expect to get with these younger defensemen, and they've all stepped up. Charney was a plus 11. I think Schmidt's like a plus 12. You know, they both skate, they move the puck. And, you know, for those who haven't seen Nate Schmidt a lot, he had his ups and downs his first couple years in the league, but he's the best skater on the team. He's the fastest, the smoothest, he moves the puck well, he's got some offensive instincts that he doesn't really use a lot right now because they don't need it. I think his future is as bright as anybody on the blue line, and it's just, you know, you would think that maybe they'd be looking to acquire a defenseman on the deadline, but the way things have worked out, Shorney's your number 7 defenseman right now, I think they're pretty much set. And just, it's hard to find a weakness at the moment, and, you know, I don't like saying that, I don't want to jinx anything as a Caps fan, but it's certainly the best team they've ever had, and they are built for the playoffs where, you know, in the past, they were either lacking scoring or lacking goaltending or lacking a defensive consistency. They kind of have it all now. So, you know, you look at it, try to look at it objectively, they're certainly the best team going at the moment, but then we get back to the playoff history and, you know, can they get over that second round hump? If they get over that second round hump, it's almost like you're playing with house money and you can relax and just play the game. And whatever happens, happens. You're not going to be considered a huge disappointment. So that's going to be the big one, you know. I don't see them faltering in the first round this year, but in that second round, all those demons come back, a couple bad bounces, a couple bad goals. And
let me jump in here real quick, Scott. I got to take us out to a break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, no problem.
And thanks for coming back with us. I hate to cut Scott off because I know where he was going. I'm going to let him go right back and finish his point there. Go ahead, Scott.
I'm just getting to the, you know, the playoff history a little bit, and that's kind of where, if you've ever been to Verizon Center, when a couple bad bounces happen in the playoffs and they get behind in a game, it's just the air goes out of the building completely, and I know the players feel that. So, you know, I think hopefully if they could have a relatively smooth first round and not have to take it to seven games for a change, be a little bit rested and get into the second round and play more relaxed, I think they clearly they're constructed to have a nice run this year, and it's good to do it on the ice, though, and as soon as something goes wrong, all those demons are going to be brought up by the media, and it's going to be in their heads again.
Well, I wanted to, you mentioned Boudreau, and you mentioned what Trotz, with his philosophy, has brought to the team. He's second year there now, right?
Yes.
How, and I know some of the interim coaches or whatever, how did he get Ovechkin to buy in? And obviously that, when your leader buys in, the team buys in. So how was he able to get Ovechkin to buy in to, and, you know, his goals are down, but I'm not going to say he's less effective on the ice. Still plays his physical game, but how did he get Ovechkin 200 feet from his own goal, and when the other coaches weren't able to do that?
Well, I think he kind of appealed to Ovechkin's, you know, he's not young anymore. He's not old, but, you know, you're going on 10 years or so in the league, and your window is only so long. And I think he really, you know, he went out of his way. He went out to Las Vegas. He met with him right after he was hired. And basically told him, you know, you had problems with Adam Oates. You had problems with a couple other coaches at times because you weren't on the ice when the game was on the line. And there was a reason for that. They didn't trust you defensively. And that bothered you. You're a competitor. You know, the guy wants to win. There's no doubt about that. You know, he loves to play, he loves to compete, but he wants to win. And he's been that way since the beginning. And I think he kind of appealed to, you know, not that time's running out, but it doesn't last forever. And you want to be on the ice with the game on the line? I'll put you on the ice with the game on the line, but you got to prove to me that you're going to do it in both ends of the ice with the game on the line. And I think he also got him to buy into the fact that, you know, strong defensive play creates transition. And in hockey, transition leads to offense. And a guy like Ovechkin, you guys have seen it. I mean, he gets out wide. You know, is he the smoothest skater in the world? No. Is he the fastest? No. But he is fast and he's strong. When he gets you on his shoulder, you're not going to take the puck from him.
No.
So I think he kind of just sold him on that. You know what? A little more defense from you is going to create a little more offense for you, and it's going to keep you on the ice when you want to be on the ice with the game on the line. And, you know, I think once Ovechkin bought in, the rest of the team bought in.
Yeah, I think probably, too, like you said, he's not old, but it comes with maturity. I think I see a lot of, and maybe a couple years ago at the All-Star game, and then certainly last year, where you see just the maturity of Ovechkin himself. Probably had a lot to do with that as well. You got to give the player a little credit in that, too, because he's obviously growing. And, man, scary team. We were throwing playoff scenarios around. Could it be a worse scenario that Boston squeaks in the second wild card spot and we get a Caps-Bruins first-round matchup? Because I think if the Bruins get in, and we had a local handicapper here, Dana Lane, on a couple weeks ago, and as far as future bets and teams to look at the sports book here, he had the Bruins there at 22-1. They're holding the playoff spot, and if they do get in, and if Rask does kind of turn the corner a little bit,
right,
that's a team no one in the East is going to want to play. Is that or right, the other worst case scenario for Washington? Montreal gets in and Carey Price is in. You know, he's played. he's a fresh, maybe been playing for 2 or 3 weeks. Got his game legs back on. And right, now you got a Capitals Carey Price matchup in the first round. What would be the worst case scenario out of those two that Washington wouldn't want to play?
I think, I mean, obviously Carey Price is the best thing going in the goal. At the moment you could say, you could argue Hopi, but when Price is on his team, you know, I mean,
yeah, best in the world.
Hopi's right there with him. Price is the proven, the proven best at the moment. I think I would fear the Bruins more for a couple of reasons. The greatest Price is, he still would have been, he would have been out for a lot of the season. The Canadians clearly are having some chemistry issues. They struggle to score goals. They're okay defensively. I mean, the whole thing with Subban last night, the turnover, I mean, that was a bit ridiculous. He was trying to make a play, and the three guys who came back to back check didn't do much to prevent the goal. But, Markov's getting older. I think the Bruins, the fact that they got enough guys who have made the run before and taken it to the finals or won, they've got a pretty good combination of skill. They got some skill guys with Krejci and Marchand having a great year. They play a pretty defensively responsible game.
Very physical.
And, Tuukka Rask, when he's on his game, is as good as anybody. You know, he's not always on his game, but when he is, he's pretty tough. So if he got hot at the wrong time, guys like Bergeron, great two-way players who can put it in the net and keep you from putting it in the net, like you said, physical. Games with the Bruins and Caps have been pretty nasty over the years, too. I don't know if it's a Wednesday night rivalry night, but they don't like each other very much. It would be a great series,
I think.
It would be a tough one. It wouldn't be a slam dunk for Washington.
That would be the one that, like you said, if they were ever going to get over the hump, I think that beating the Bruins in the first round would maybe be the one that propelled them out of that second round. Finally, they would ride such a momentum wave out of that series if they could get past them. I'd look forward to that.
That's
one of my favorite matchups if it ends up happening that way.
When they knocked the Bruins off a few years ago, not many people remember this. They ended up playing the Rangers again, of course, and they were like, the Caps were less than a minute away from winning the series against the Rangers, and Joel Ward lifted somebody's stick, got a 4-minute high sticking call in the last minute, and they gave up a goal to tie in the last minute and a goal in the first minute of overtime to lose.
Oh.
Both power play goals, and they were literally a minute from winning that series. So there's been a series of things, but the Bruins are a good team, and you might say they've been underachieving a little bit, but it seems like they're getting right at the right time.
I kind of look at them that they're overachieving based on, trading Lucic, letting Dougie Hamilton go. I had them missing the playoffs rather easily after what they went through in the offseason.
I agree with that, actually.
I think that they're actually – I've been watching a little more of them now since we talked with Dana about maybe going down to the sports book here, and they're hitting their stride. Aside from that aberration against the Kings last week, they're starting to play some really good Bruins brand of hockey right now. That would be a fun matchup in the first round. Chris, did you want to jump in here and get a couple more questions in before we got to go?
Yeah, I got two quickies here for Scott. Which team in the East do you think would give the Caps the toughest matchup in the playoff series? And the second one is a statement. Is it fair or is it unfair to say that if the Caps don't make the Stanley Cup Finals, don't represent the East, given what how good this team is, this season's been a major disappointment?
Okay, so first question, team you fear in the East. I'm not going to be too wishy-washy here, but they have not played well against Florida this year. However, I think that in a series against Florida, ultimately, the Caps actually would have probably more experience in that series, probably a more complete team. I think Florida's still a year or two away from being a real Stanley Cup potential contender. But I will say the Caps have really struggled with them this year. So it would worry me a little bit, but I think ultimately over a long series that the experience and the depth of the Caps would prevail. Just based on history and talk about getting over the hump, I mean, I guess you have to say the Rangers. You just got to prove it. You got to beat the best to be the best, and they've only been able to beat them once in all these different playoff series that they've had, and it's been a lot of seven-game struggles and, you know, getting the Lindquist in your head and getting them out of your head. And, you know, I would say that would be the one I would fear just because of history, but I also would say, kind of like what you were saying with the Bruins, if they could win that one, you know, it would probably propel them a long way.
Yeah.
What about making the if they don't make the finals? Is it unfair or is it fair to say that this season's been a major disappointment? Given the
I would say you got to get past the second round. It's a major disappointment. If you don't get past the second round, it's a major disappointment. If you get to the conference finals and lose, it's disappointing. But I wouldn't call the season a disappointment because you take it a step further. And, you know, you're still bringing the core back for the next year. So I don't think they have to get to the finals, but I think they do have to get out of the second round or else it would be a major disappointment.
See, the way I look at the East is, real quick, I see, if I was a fan of any team and being a fan of the Islanders, I could see the Islanders, you know, harder to make the playoffs, everything is so tight, beating any team in the East, also being, you know, capable of losing to anyone.
Yeah.
I think it's really a 50-50 proposition. I feel that way about almost, and you give me any Eastern Conference matchup, with the exception of the Capitals. To me, the Capitals, from everything you've said, is clearly the best team in the East, and you know they have to go do it. They have to kind of run the gauntlet and get to the finals. If I, you know, in sports you get these windows, and not that their window would close, but you see it now with the Rangers. You know, it's quite possible that last year was the, you know, maybe the last of that window, which a lot of people are talking about here. They're still a good team, but, you know, when push comes to shove and they play a team like the Blackhawks, they're not on that level yet. You know, they're not on that level anymore.
No.
So that's what I would say is you get these windows. So, you know, when we're in the middle, past the middle of February, you only have 10 regular season losses, you know.
That's amazing.
I think the, you know, the bar is set that, and that's obviously, it's not going to be easy to win the cup, but I think they got to represent the East. That's just my opinion personally.
Yeah, I think the encouraging thing is that on the nights that they haven't been great, it's most nights they found a way to win, and that's kind of the sign of a great team when you're not on your A game and you still can clear it out and find a way, which was a huge flaw in the Boudreaux teams. Like, when they went on their game, you know, they give up 6 goals. Now, when they're not on their game, they kind of dig in, they kind of get defensive, and, you know, when you got your skill guys scoring grinder-type goals to win games late in games, that's a pretty good sign, I think.
Yeah, as evidenced
and
by
real
the,
quick,
by the game against
real
the
quick,
Kings
tonight. I think if we get another somewhere along the line out of the Capitals series, obviously the Capitals, I would put the Capitals as a big favorite, but I think Scott could attest, you know, both teams played so well in that series last year that, you know, either team could have won. It was a shame to see one of those teams not advance.
I like the Islanders. I love the way they're constructed, you know. Skill players, solid defense. If Grice turns out to can keep playing the way he's been playing and he turns out to be the guy, you know, they got size, they got skill, they got speed. I mean, they're a tough team. I would fear them as well.
So real quick, we're right up against it again, Scott. I know everybody can find you at Beltway Sport, and you also when you post your articles, you post at the Hockey Writers, I believe. Is there anything else you want to get out there?
Yeah, that's correct. No, that's it. I try to. You know, like I was saying before, with my real job, I'm the assistant athletic director in college, and we're just, you know, I would write every day if I could. I just don't have the time, but I appreciate that, you know, the opportunity to do stuff like this. I love the game. My son's actually a junior hockey prospect, and hockey is pretty much, if I'm not at work, I'm with my son at a hockey, at one of his games, or watching a Caps game somewhere, or someone else.
Well, I'm sorry about that ending. We were short on time, and I had to cut right off. I wish it had gone better, and the audio was cleaner on this segment. But we washed it up and cleaned it up the best we could, and I hope you guys still enjoy listening to it.
For Chris, this is Mark, and we're gone. We'll be right back.